Good morning. So we are partway through a series looking at who am I on our identity. And this is week four, I believe. Last week, Joel talked about I am adopted as a child, as a son of God. And if you haven't heard that, it's worth a listen. It's on the website. And we're kind of following on. So he talked about how you come into the family of God. And this week we're looking at what it's like to be a disciple of Jesus, what it means to follow Jesus. So, what is a disciple is probably where we ought to start, isn't it? And when you look at what Jesus said about discipleship, it's quite dramatic. Disciples was not an uncommon thing in Jesus' time. It was quite normal for rabbis to have disciples who followed them, who listened to their teaching for a period of time until they'd got hold of it and then went and taught other people. So it was a bit like an apprenticeship for a certain period of time. But Jesus' discipleship is very different in some quite key ways. Being Jesus' disciple is more radical. When you look at some of the things that Jesus said about being his disciple, actually some of them are quite shocking. In Matthew 10, he talks about, take up your cross and follow me. I don't know that I want to have a cross. Actually, that doesn't sound very comfortable. In Luke 14, he talks about, love him to the extent that it looks like you hate your family in comparison. That's pretty extreme. John 12, he talks about when you follow him, you go where he goes like a servant. You serve what he's doing, and you follow where he goes regardless, a bit like Ruth with Naomi in the Old Testament. And in Luke 18, one man said, what should I do? And he talked about storing up treasures in heaven, and he said, you need to sell everything you have and come and follow me. And actually, when you look at how he called the disciples, that's exactly what they did. They put down everything, all the life they'd known, and followed him, leaving behind businesses, family, all sorts of things. Really, really extreme. Nothing like an apprenticeship, actually. Nothing like a kind of, well, I'll do this for a while and then go back to my life as it was. So it's really radical. And actually being called by the rabbi was also not common. Normally, when you were a disciple, you kind of looked around and went, well, who am I going to follow and I'll choose? But actually, as we've sung this morning, in this case, the rabbi, as it were, chose us, which actually is pretty phenomenal. It's not about going on comparethesaviour.com and having a look and seeing how Jesus measures up against other kind of saviours that we might have and does he kind of measure up and will we choose him? Not like that at all. This is the King of Kings has left heaven and come to earth and chosen us. And I don't know about you, but that fact that Jesus, who was in heaven with his Father in all that glory and all that wonder, chose to leave that behind and come to earth for me, for you, blows my mind. Why would he do it for me? What is it that he can see in me that I very often can't? And actually, when you look at him selecting his disciples in the Gospels, it was a careful process. He spent a whole night praying about who to choose. And we can look at who he chose and think, well, he didn't do a very good job. He should have prayed for a bit longer. What was Judas all about? He messed up a bit there. But actually, they were carefully selected because there was a purpose. Judas was really necessary to the purpose that Jesus came to earth for. He was part of that process. So he was very carefully chosen. Whatever we might think about the choice, God knows better. And we can look at our lives and go, why would Jesus choose me? Why would he do that? And we can look in the mirror and think, I'm not really anything very special. I don't know about you, but when I was at school and they did those kind of pick your team moments, I was definitely not the first on the list for many of those pick the team moments. I wasn't particularly sporty, I wasn't particularly popular, and so I was kind of bottom of the list, really. But actually, it's not like that. Jesus came and chose you specifically for a specific purpose. And actually, friends, you choose. Family, you don't get to choose. And for some of us, we might wish that that was a bit different. But friends, you get to choose. Some of us, we can look around and go, yeah, God, was this the family I needed to be born into? But actually, when you choose your friends, and if you're careful, you choose friends carefully rather than just making whoever comes along. Choose friends who encourage you, who build you up, who add value to your life. Jesus chose us like that. Imagine being selected to go and live with the Queen. Imagine getting an invitation one morning in the post and the Queen saying, I'd like you to come and live with me, be part of my family. Imagine how that would make you feel. Actually, it's an honor. It's a privilege. And Jesus inviting you to be his friend is an honor and a privilege. It's not, well, will I follow Jesus? What's he going to do for me? It's like, wow, really? I get to be your friend? I get to have you as part of my life? He initiated it. Sometimes we think that we initiated the process, but actually God started it. It was God's idea. God was the one who came and said, I choose you. So it kind of changes our perspective in how we treat him, in how we think about him when it's God that initiated the process. He's not there to satisfy my every need and jump when I snap my fingers and go, well, I need this fixed and I need that sorted. That sense of privilege and honor covers the whole relationship. Clearly, he can and does satisfy my every need. Clearly, he does do the most amazing things for me. But actually, that knowledge that the King of Kings is my friend, there's a tension between the two, isn't there? And John 15, 16 goes on to talk about him choosing us for a purpose. But he says, you did not choose me, I chose you. And I think for some of us this morning, we need to just pause and go, actually, I just need to think about that fact. You did not choose me, but I chose you. Jesus chose you. Every one of you, there's not one of you in here that doesn't apply to. And you might be sitting here this morning and thinking, well, I can understand why he might have chosen Chris, because he can sing and he plays amazing songs and he can write songs and he plays the guitar. And I can understand why he might have chosen Tony. He's up there up front leading the meeting. I can understand why he might have chosen other people. But me? Why would he have chosen me? But you were very carefully chosen. Excuse me. And he chooses us personally. It's not a distant thing. So in John 17, Jesus is praying before he goes to the cross. And he prays for us. And I want you to just listen to what he's saying here. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. And then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. I in them and you in me. That's pretty close and pretty intimate. Actually, you can't get much closer than Jesus in you. and this, it's a bit corny, this thing about intimacy and into me you see. But actually, when you allow somebody to be intimate, when you allow somebody to be that close, they see everything. There is nothing hidden. Jesus calls us to that kind of relationship where he's really close. So close that there's nothing hidden anymore. He's not just talking about an apprenticeship where you come and learn about him on a Sunday morning and go home and the rest of the week he's a bit kind of out there. Actually, he wants to be like that, as one with you all week. I wonder if you can imagine what living life with Jesus was like for those disciples who had those 3 years with him on earth. I've known Janet for a really, really long time, and she's a really close friend. And I thought I knew her quite well. And then we lived together for the last few years. Actually, when you live together, you really get to know somebody really well. You get to know the things they like and the things they really don't like. You get to know what they look like on a Monday morning when they've just got up. You get to know what they think about things, how they react when they get phone calls, how they react when things happen. You see their life in a completely different way than the apprenticeship model where you go and you get some teaching and you come home. It's a completely different style of discipling. And so those years where the disciples were with Jesus on the earth, they ate together, they laughed together, they were really tired together and grumpy, they were sick together, they had disagreements, but they had banter as well. They supported each other, they served each other, they encouraged each other, they cared for each other, they had misunderstandings, they had correction, they did have teaching, they had challenge, they certainly had adventure and excitement. I think it must have been a bit of a roller coaster living with Jesus, where you're like, what on earth are we doing today? But actually, it's good. And so the discipleship that Jesus calls us to is about being really known, but also knowing him really well. He's not a boss. He's not somebody that you're distant to that comes and stands at the front and teaches you a lesson and goes. He lives with you. But it works both ways. Janet has learned things about me living together that she didn't know. And it's the same with our life with Jesus. It's not a friendship if it's all one way. And I think sometimes our perception of our friendship with Jesus is he's up there and what do we get from him? That's not a friendship. I don't know about you, but the friends that just want to take from me are not my closest friends. It's about sharing hearts. And Jesus wants to share his heart with you. He doesn't just want you to learn his teaching and tell you what he needs. So there's a level of intimacy. It's a deep friendship. There are people I see here every Sunday who I don't really know that well because I don't live with you. I don't share life with you the same. But Jesus is inviting us to a relationship that's not superficial. It's not a Sunday morning relationship. And deep friendships are characterized by things like openness and honesty, allowing ourselves to be really well known. Actually, they're characterized by a level of commitment, of trust, choosing to trust sometimes, of companionship, of shared interests. And actually sacrificial love. I wonder which of your friends you'd be willing to take a bullet for. Jesus did for us. Not a bullet, maybe. Actually, a bullet would have been a lot quicker, wouldn't it? And Jesus, friendship, in a sense, for me, I see it a bit more like, it's more like a marriage than a friendship. It's more like that level of commitment. Jesus made a very public declaration of his love for us before we'd ever committed anything. He allowed himself to be put on a cross and he said, I love you this much. I'm willing to do this for you. before I'd said yes to anything. Sometimes when I was thinking about relationships when I was a teenager, and there's that, and a young person, and there's that moment when you're growing a relationship with somebody who potentially might be a partner or might not be, and you get to the point where you know each other well, and then there's the moment where it's who's going to say it first? Who's going to actually step out and say, I love you first? Actually, Jesus didn't have any such qualms. He just went, I love you. There was no dithering. There was no hesitation. He just said, I love you. And his invitation, which is what this is, it's an invitation to a relationship, a proposal almost, if you like. It's like him going down on one knee and going, will you be my friend? Will you marry me? It demands a response. It demands an answer. He doesn't call us to be slavish in our response, but he is the master. He's the King of Kings. He's Lord of all. But the overriding theme is not, you must do this or else. It's one of being loved and responding to that love. Not slavery, but responding in love. So there's a passage in John 15. Bear with me while I find it. John 15, 9 to 17 says this. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Wow. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. Just as I have kept my Father's commands, you will remain in my love, and I remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. Well, that's all right. That's simple then, isn't it? Actually, John 15, the first few times I ever read that as a young Christian, I felt like it was saying, in order to be loved, you have to obey me. That's not what it says. It's not about proving our love for him by being obedient. It's about responding to his love and staying in his love. This picture, I couldn't actually find one to have, but I think it's really cool. It's a double onesie. And it's a picture of actually what happens when we join to Jesus. It is a picture of exactly that. We get joined together. We become inseparable. Now, unfortunately, some of us live like we can unzip the onesie and take it off when it's not Sunday. Some of us live like it's okay to have a day off from being joined to Jesus. But actually, it's a for-life commitment that he's inviting us into. So I'm going to ask Barbara and Nikki, I didn't forewarn you, sorry, to come and be Exhibit A, if that's okay. So I want you to imagine that Barbara and Nikki, you can choose in your head which is which, but one is Jesus. So choose which one looks most like Jesus. And one is a disciple. And they've become a disciple, and this is what happens. Just come closer together. You need to be much closer than that. And this is what happens. I hope I don't cut off the blood supply to you. I'm just going to tie it around like that. Okay. And actually, you joined at the leg as well. Sorry. three-legged. We could have done with a slightly shorter bungee, but never mind. Let's hope it doesn't ping too much. And when we're joined together like that, we learn to walk in step. And it's great while you're walking in step. So if you just demonstrate walking around together, good job, guys. Actually, it's a bit like that. When you first become joined to Jesus, it feels a bit clunky because you're learning to walk differently. Oh, no. But what happens if Jesus decides to go that way down the route of generosity and Nikki's like, are you kidding? And tries to walk this way. It strains these bonds. It strains the cords of love that are binding us together. It doesn't snap them necessarily. It doesn't make Jesus walk away from her. It's just he's choosing to go that way and she's going, well, that feels really difficult. And pulling the other way, actually, you're joined. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. And so it strains the bonds of love. I might call you back. It's not a brilliant illustration because it isn't exactly like that. It's not a brilliant illustration because the bungee comes off. But actually, our life with Jesus is supposed to be he's the one who leads and we're the one who follows. And I have a little video clip, which bear with me, it might take a second to sort. I get a L'Oreal advert first. It might be a little bit small, but hopefully you can get the idea. Thank you. I did contemplate, since Johnny made such a good Jesus when Joel was preaching last week, contemplate getting Johnny to demonstrate that rather than having a video clip. But I have seen him at the Texan line dance, so I didn't. Actually, I don't know if you've ever tried to dance a waltz or something like that where either nobody's trying to lead or two people are trying to lead. It doesn't work very well. It certainly doesn't look as beautiful. And I looked at quite a few, had an interesting time yesterday afternoon, looking at YouTube videos of dance like that. And there were some tutorial ones, and the tutorials talked about learning to be the leader or the follower. And there's always somebody who leads and somebody who follows for it to work well. And in effect, God is inviting us, Jesus invites us into a dance with him, but he needs to lead for it to look beautiful, for it to work well. And sometimes what happens is partway through the dance, we try to lead and stop letting Jesus lead. And then it doesn't kind of work quite so well and we end up tripping over our steps. But actually, we need to let him lead, which is easy to say, isn't it? It's easy to say, I need to let Jesus lead. And I was thinking about the illustration with the bungee ropes, and if I can borrow you again briefly, I won't bother tying you together again, but thinking about following Jesus, and Barbara, if you come and stand and face me, and then Nikki behind, it's more like this picture. Jesus is in front. He sees the path ahead. He knows where he's going. He knows what's coming up. He can see ahead. And the closer we stay in, and the more we keep our eyes fixed on him, the less vision we have of actually all of this path ahead. And the path ahead sometimes looks really scary, sometimes looks really dangerous, sometimes looks totally impossible, too steep, too narrow, too dark. But Jesus can see. Jesus knows where he's going. He knows how to get to the other end of the path. And we have to stay close behind. And what happens is when we allow fear or lack of trust or those kind of things to get between us and Jesus and it creates a distance, what happens is we start to see more of the path and we start to tell him we can't go there and it's too dangerous and we can't do this. And we allow that gap in between us to get so that we can see. And we start giving him directions about where we think we should be going. And we start saying, no, no, Jesus, that's the wrong way. We can't go that way. I can't possibly do that. Thank you. And so it's about what is it that I'm allowing to get between me and Jesus that creates a gap, that creates distance, that actually stops me from being able to stay close and safe. And I think there's one more illustration I want to just show you because I think this is really key. And some of us are in some really difficult situations. Some of us are in some really difficult times. And in those times, it's critical that we stay close. And the picture of Jesus' love is like this. Jesus is under the umbrella of his love, saying, come and join me. Now, if I ask somebody to come and join me under this umbrella and they try and keep that distance, what's going to happen? They're actually going to be out in the rain. They can't fit under the umbrella of his love. They have to come close. And so staying close to his love, staying close to where he is the safest place to be. But actually, that feels quite difficult sometimes. That feels hard. I was thinking about examples of this. And at the moment, I have lots of examples, but I was thinking about Janet because I was thinking about her in the context of the friendship. And that passage we read talks about, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. The way to stay under the umbrella of his love, the way to stay safe is to obey Jesus, is to listen to his voice and do what he says. So Janet is about to go on another adventure with Jesus in a week's time. And in the natural, it looks crazy. In the natural, you look at it and you think, that does not make sense. What are you doing? You had a home, a job, all of this stuff in Hexham. What are you doing? But God said, and the safest place for Janet is under the umbrella of his love, which means God says, I do it. Even when it doesn't appear to make sense. So it means moving. So it means going somewhere where, well, I don't have a job yet. But God says, so I can trust him to provide for me. Because if I'm following what he's asked me to do, it will be safe. It will be okay. Our job is to keep looking into his eyes. If you think about the dancer, keep looking into his eyes and allow him to lead. And not worry about the circumstances. Not worry about the room. Not worry about what all that looks like. But actually keep looking into his eyes and allowing him to lead us. We can't obey if we don't know what he says. So we need to read, at the very least, the Gospels so that we know what Jesus asks of us. Actually, there's enough in this little one passage to keep us going for a while about learning to love each other. We need to learn to love ourselves in order to love each other. That's a whole other preach, I think. Jesus has already sacrificed everything. And for us, sometimes following him involves sacrifice. Janet is sacrificing some things in order to follow what he said. But actually, there's an excitement. There's a lift in the spirit that goes, wow, what's it going to be like? Because she knows him. Because she's growing in her relationship with him. So I think the discipleship, for me, looks like discipleship that Jesus calls us to, looks like actually surrender. Those of you who know me will be surprised to hear that I've managed to get that in somewhere. But discipleship is about surrender. It's about saying, you're God, and I'm saying yes to you. Yes to whatever it is that you're asking of me, in the sure knowledge that that's the safest place to be. So I have two questions that I feel God is asking this morning. One of them is, will you let me lead? As somebody who's battled with independence and being a strong independent woman and I don't need anybody, that one's really hard. For some of us, we may never have let him lead. So he's saying to you this morning, will you let me lead in your life? Will you choose to trust me, that I know the path ahead? For some of us in confusing, scary, difficult times, will you let me lead? Choosing to let go of the deception that we're in control. We think we're in control. Actually, we're not. Choosing to let him lead when actually we don't really feel like we need him too much. We're doing a grand job, thanks. Some of us are in the situation where life feels kind of okay. But he's saying, will you let me lead? And will you let me lead you into new levels of surrender? There's always new places to go. And the second question is, will you come closer? Will you come and say to me, I've allowed this to come between us, and I want to put it down and let you come closer? Whether that's fear, whether that's hurt and pain, whatever it is that's causing a distance between you and Jesus, will you come closer into new levels of being known and of knowing him? And he is the best person you could get to know. Will you come closer and prioritize me in your life? Friends that are really, really close friends get priority. They get much higher priority than superficial friends. And I think that's where I'll stop. Thank you.